Catholic Radio Indy now presents Faith in Action, a program that looks at how everyday people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Our program is underwritten in part by Franciscan St. Francis Health, providing faith-based integrated health care, a recipient of HealthGrade's 2015 America's 100 Best Hospitals Award, and by Marian University, a great Catholic university dedicated to providing students with excellence in teaching and learning in the Franciscan and liberal arts tradition, preparing transformative leaders for service to the world. And now, here's today's edition of Faith in Action. This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Ganley, and today we're talking to Mark Tuttle with Right to Life of Indianapolis. And Mark, you've got a lot of things going on there. A couple of, I guess maybe the next thing coming up will be the county and state fairs.
Yes, this is a busy time of year for us at Right to Life of Indianapolis. We have Hendricks County Fair, Johnson County Fair. We have a couple of booths at Black Expo. And then we will have our tent at the state fair. So anybody interested in volunteering to help us out, we always need volunteers to be our ambassadors to other fairgoers and to help us build a culture of life.
And what would a volunteer do if they said, yeah, I can give you an afternoon at the fair?
We have educational materials usually there at the fair. A lot of it has to do with fetal development, other life issues, and a lot of it is just pointing people around the tent and honestly being there to listen to their stories. So often people will stop by and they'll want to share their story.
Sure.
Have a lot of pregnant moms stop by with their little kids, kind of pointing out, you know, on our fetal models, you were this big once upon a time, checking to see how far along they are in their pregnancy. So things like that. And so a lot of it is just being an ambassador, you know, Right to Life of Indianapolis. The reason we exist is to build a culture of life in Cincinnati, in central Indiana, to build a culture of life in central Indiana.
Sure.
And, we do that through educational booths. We do that through our youth outreach. We do that through outreach to churches, and the whole idea is to try to transform a culture here in central Indiana. Our main focus is on really trying to promote a narrative about abortion and end-of-life issues and euthanasia, and also trying to transform it, trying to, I think, change the way our city thinks about these issues to where abortion becomes not only unavailable, I think that's one of our primary goals, is to make abortion unavailable in our city, but also to make it unthinkable. Make it within our culture to where it's such an awful idea that nobody would ever think of wanting to do it.
Yeah, it's amazing how casual it has become. I mean, we're talking about taking the life of a human fetus, and people say, oh, you know, it's a right, it's a this, it's a that, I can do whatever I want and whatever. And yet if that, you know, baby were 6 months older, nobody would even think about it. They'd go to jail for it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's a ways off yet, but you do have a dinner coming up a little bit later this year as well.
Yeah, we're very excited. We're going to have Pam Stenzel speaking. Pam is she's an abstinence speaker. That's kind of what she's known for. But she also has her own story. Her own story, I think, about the exceptions, about rape, incest, life of the mother, and how when we talk about those are more than just issues. Those are personal. People conceived in rape are truly people. And, she has her own testimony and her own story to share with us. So it's going to be a fantastic time. That's going to be October 3rd down at the Marriott downtown.
Okay.
And, keep an eye out. We will have invitations coming out shortly and more information about that coming up.
Okay. We're talking to Mark Tuttle with Right to Life of Indianapolis. And the reason that we're really talking to Mark today is one of your big events, at least an event that involves a lot of people, is the Right to Life Essay Contest, and the winners have been determined.
That's correct. Yeah, we just concluded not only our essay contest, but also our art contest and our speech contest. And, we usually have about 700 students from across the city that participate. Usually the way it goes is, it'll be a classroom at first, and then the teacher will winnow that down to the best within the classroom, and then it'll be the best within the school. And then the best from each school gets submitted to us for judging. And then, of course, you know, homeschools are schools in their own right. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of homeschoolers that, well, you know, the school of one, that was the winner of that school. So that gets submitted to our judges for judging as well. And the judges went, and very thankful. These are volunteer judges. We have panels of three judges per grade level. And yeah, they determined our four winners.
All right. And we're going to be hearing each of those essays here in just a moment, but go ahead and mention the winners' names.
All right. So our first place winner from seventh grade was Carolyn Funder. And our first place winner from eighth grade was Thomas DeFries. Our first place winner from our ninth and 10th grade division was Anne Marie Frisbee. And our first place winner from the 11th and 12th grades was Faith Merle.
And we're going to get to our first essay winner here in just a second to hear their essay. But Carolyn Funder is with us, and Carolyn goes to St. Luke's School. Carolyn, if you would tell us a little bit about yourself, your brothers and sisters, that sort of thing, what grade you are in school.
I'm going into eighth grade in school, and I have a brother and two sisters.
All right. And you are a seventh grader at St. Luke's.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And, well, I tell you what, why don't we just jump right in and have you read your essay. How long did it take you to write your essay?
At school, we worked it for them about 2 weeks all together, starting with our thesis and then working with our teachers to build it up.
Why don't you go ahead, if you would, and read your essay for us.
Abby Johnson, a person with her own unique view on right to life, uses her personal experiences to support pro-life beliefs. Also, she made her opinions known by writing inspirational books, making a website, recruiting a team, and using her stories to influence everyone near her. Abby Johnson is truly the image of courage, fortitude, and uniqueness. If I had this child, why wasn't it obvious to me that I already had a child who was growing inside of me? Once you're pregnant, there is no if. That child, though tiny and in an early stage of development, already exists. This is a quote from Abby Johnson's book, Unplanned. Abby Johnson is one of the most prominent right-to-life activists today, but she was once the polar opposite. For 8 years of her life, Abby Johnson was a director at Planned Parenthood, an abortion clinic. It wasn't until October 6th, a day that changed her life, that Abby realized how abhorrent abortions were. On October 6th, Abby Johnson witnessed an abortion take place on an ultrasound. Overwhelmed and appalled, Abby Johnson quit her job and started a new life as a pro-life activist. Driven by her unique views and personal experiences, many women in America find Abby Johnson to be exceedingly inspiring. In her uplifting book, Abby Johnson shared her perspective of abortion clinics when writing that it represents a place where women go and are left confused because they do not hear the truth about abortion in their choices. They're in a sense abused by the medical procedures that are performed without quality medical instructions or information. It's a tragic place. Abby Johnson's perspective of abortions made her realize how malevolent abortions were, so she took action in the community. First, she thought about how she could make her opinions known. This ambition encouraged her to write her own book, Unplanned. This book was written to make her story known and to motivate young girls to think before acting. Next, Abby Johnson took advantage of the media and created an anti-abortion website that took a different approach to the problem. This website was created for the sake of people who work at abortion clinics. This website advertised her new mission, the ATTWN, or And Then There Were None. Abby's mission was to persuade abortion clinic workers to follow in her footsteps and quit to start a better life. In her own words, she was stopping abortion from the inside out. Also, Abby Johnson volunteered at the Coalition for Life, a group that regularly prayed outside her old workplace. 5 years after writing her first book, an autobiography about her journey, Abby Johnson decided to write another book about the stories of other abortion clinic employees who also quit their jobs. This book, The Walls Are Talking, was released in 2016. In conclusion, Abby Johnson is a unique individual who was driven by her own personal experiences to make a difference in the community. Abby has the ability to influence and inspire her peers to help her make a difference. She has written two books, created a website, started a mission, and recruited a team, all for one common purpose, to stop abortions.
Wow. Very, very good, Carolyn. Thank you very much. That is Carolyn Funder. She is the seventh grade Right to Life winner from St. Luke's Catholic School. And Carolyn, is abortion something that has ever talked about at school? I mean, other than writing this essay, is it something that gets mentioned from time to time that you talk about in class?
Well, in social studies class, our teacher, Dr. Willett, likes to have like debates and discussions. So sometimes she brings up different topics to have our opinions on, and sometimes that comes up.
Oh, okay. Very good. Now, sometimes with some of the older students who are in high school, we kind of ask them about their college plans, but I notice you're in the seventh grade, so you've got a change coming down the road, too. Do you know where you'll be going to school after St. Luke's?
I'm not sure, but I'll probably be going to Guerin Catholic.
Ah, okay. Wonderful. Wonderful school up in Hamilton County up there. Any plans for the rest of the summer? Of course, there's not too much summer left, I guess.
Not really. I basically just enjoy sleeping in.
All right. Well, that's one of my favorite pastimes as well. Carolyn Funder, thank you very much for coming in and talking with us and sharing your essay. Great job on the essay, and good luck as an eighth grader there at St. Luke's. And our next winner is Anne Marie Frisbee. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Anne Marie, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you live, what grade you're in, what school you go to, that sort of thing.
I live in Lebanon. It's a small town, mm-hmm. a little bit outside of Indy. I go to Lumen Christi Catholic High School, a very small, very Catholic high school in Indianapolis.
And let's see, you were telling me before the broadcast about brothers and sisters.
Oh, I have five brothers and sisters, four brothers older than me, and one younger sister.
And how long did it take you to write the essay that you're going to read for us?
Well, it took a few weeks, and then I was in the correcting stage for a while, and then I sent it in a week or two late, but thankfully, a week or two late for my school.
Uh-huh.
But thankfully, I was able to get it in on time for the contest.
Okay. Any kind of research material you did, or how did you come up with all the various ideas that are in your essay?
Well, of course, my prompt was about people who have affected me in my beliefs mm-hmm. about the pro-life cause. So the first two didn't really take that much research.
Mm-hmm.
They were my family members. Mm-hmm. The first were two, I guess, were my parents and then my Aunt Kathleen. For the third one, St. Gianna Bretamola, mm-hmm. I wanted to do some research. I looked up a few websites to try to figure out information about her to make sure it was correct, what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote that into my essay.
Okay. Well, go ahead, if you would, please, and just read your essay for us here.
Okay. If there is one issue which divides our society, it is human dignity. People on both sides of the life issues controversy claim to be working for justice and compassion. On the surface, the pro-choice cause seems reasonable. Why should we force pregnant girls to have children outside of marriage? Why should we force people to burden themselves with caring for invalids? Why should we force people to suffer through terminal diseases? Many people have wondered about these questions, including me. However, I know people who have done wonderfully selfless and beautiful things for the sake of human dignity. If not for them, I might be pro-choice. Naturally, my first teachers on matters of life were my parents. After facing the possibility of infertility for about 6 years, my mother gave birth in her late 20s to my eldest brother. About 2 years later, my second brother was born. Robert, my second eldest brother, is autistic. Due to the added problems of raising an autistic child and the tendency in modern culture to encourage small families, most couples would not have been open to more children. However, my parents accepted 4 more children, including myself. If they had not been willing to take on the extra stress, monetary costs, and responsibilities of more children, I would not be here. In my more distant family, there are other excellent examples of self-sacrifice. However, my Aunt Kathleen stands out. As a single woman, she adopted 7 children from difficult backgrounds. One of her adopted children is a deaf man named Eugene. After choosing to adopt him, Kathleen learned American Sign Language and became a translator for the deaf. She also chose to adopt a girl with Down syndrome, despite the fact that this child will be a permanent dependent. Many people wouldn't be willing to raise a deaf child or a Down syndrome child, but my aunt freely chose to care for both. Although she had no obligations to them, she opened her home and her heart to 7 children. Another example which has touched my life is the story of St. Gianna Beretta Mola. She was a doctor, a wife, and a mother from mid-20th century Italy. In 1942, Gianna became a physician with a special devotion to women, infants, the aged, and the impoverished. After a few years as a pediatrician, she married Pietro Mola. Although she continued working, Gianna also became the mother of 3 children. However, this delicate balance of serving the sick and serving her family was not the limit to her generosity. While pregnant with her 4th child, she learned that she had a tumor. The only treatment that would not kill the unborn child would put her life in danger. Dr. Mola chose to save her child and gave birth on April 21st, 1962, to her daughter. Gianna died a week later. There are a million reasons, logical, reasonable, and doctrinal, to believe in the dignity of all human persons. However, we do not often follow our minds the way we follow our hearts. People are touched more by actions than by words. My parents, my Aunt Kathleen, and St. Gianna Mola have helped me along my journey with their examples. They lead me to a point where I am able to believe their reasoning and understand human dignity. After all, treating people with the dignity they deserve demands selfless love. If we are honest believers in human dignity, we must be what my parents, Aunt Kathleen, and St. Gianna Mola were. Selfless.
Very nice. Very, very nice. That is one of the Right to Life essay winners, Anne Marie Frisbee. And Anne Marie, you're going to be a junior this coming year at Lumen Christi?
Yes, I will.
And any thoughts on plans after graduation from high school?
Well, I've been considering pursuing a career in writing, and I would like to go to Steubenville, Franciscan University of Steubenville in Ohio.
All right. Well, thank you very much for stopping by and sharing your essay with us. And one of our winners wasn't able to make it today. So, Mark, if you would, please read the essay that Thomas DeFries wrote.
I'd be delighted to. Some of the greatest lessons I've ever learned in my life have been through watching my parents deal with my disabled 7-year-old sister, Gracie. Gracie has a rare single gene disorder called MED13L, which causes severe mental disabilities and, in her case, high anxiety and sensory processing issues. Gracie is on the low to middle part of the functioning table, being unable to do certain things that we take for granted, like reading or playing sports or being in clubs. Many times, she becomes very angry and very aggressive. I've dealt with her on many of these occasions. At other times, she's very affectionate and sweet. I've learned many lessons through her, including the importance of the virtue of empathy and the importance of the respect for life and appreciation for God creating all people equal. The first lesson I've learned is empathy. While watching Gracie throughout my life, I've seen her develop and blossom into who she is today. A few years ago, before she went to school, she would often become severely upset and sometimes violent with things or people around her. She also used to cower away in shyness from people she did not know, covering her face with her hands and not saying much if the new person was still present. Most of that has changed since she has been in school. She still has bad days where she screams and throws stuff, but they're becoming less often and less intense. I do not think I have really seen Gracie run away in shyness in quite a few months, being much more social and accepting of new people. Gracie's progress has been very inspiring to watch and has made me appreciate how easy it is for those of us without disabilities to grow and develop relationships. The second lesson I've learned from Gracie would be the importance of respecting life. No matter how small or insignificant that life is, we must protect life and cherish it with tenderness and affection. Gracie is the perfect example of the type of child abortion advocates would say is not worthy of life. However, the Catholic Church teaches that whether that life is a premature baby, a disabled child, or a baby still in the womb, it is still life and needs the love we would give to a healthy newborn baby. Abortion is a direct assault to the teachings of the church and of Jesus himself. Abortion is inhuman and is one of the major problems of society at this point in time. The final lesson I've learned is that God created all mankind equal. There are many who would not see Gracie as equal to them because of her disability. But the church teaches that while we all may not have the same talents and gifts, not one person is greater than anyone else. We should treat others with equality because they are human, and so are we. So we are equals. It should not matter whether a baby is in the womb or not. The baby is still the same living being that God made in his image. God created all humans in his image, so killing a baby in the womb is killing God's creation, which we do not want to do because it would offend our loving God. My life with Gracie has reinforced these important lessons. I'm grateful God placed Gracie in our family, and I am proud to be her big brother.
Wow. Wow, that is the essay, Mark Tuttle reading it there, the essay from Thomas DeFries, who was the eighth grade winner. Thank you for sharing that with us, Mark. All right, we want to finish our program today with the winner of the essay contest from the 11th and 12th grade category, and Faith Murrell is the winner there. Faith, welcome to Faith in Action here at Catholic Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, I'm glad that you could make it. Tell us just a little bit about yourself, as far as family, brothers, sisters, and things like that.
Okay, so I am a twin. We are the second children, I guess. And
yeah, that's hard to say. You know, normally I'm the first child. I'm the second child, whatever.
The second one born, but with the twins too. So.
Okay, so when you're twins, I don't know where you. Yeah, yeah, I guess you guys have to figure that out yourselves.
So there's four of us girls, so okay. It's pretty fun.
And live where? On what side of town?
We are in Plainfield, so just south of Indy.
Okay. Very good. And what school do you go to?
We're homeschooled.
Homeschooled. Okay. Do you like your teacher?
I do very much.
Okay. Well, why don't you go ahead and read your essay for us, if you would.
Okay. Imagine a city in which everyone, young, old, and in between, is valuable. Not because of certain talents, experiences, or characteristics, but simply because every individual is a human being created in God's likeness, molded by the master potter into a work of art. Each person is a masterpiece. Imagine a culture in which everyone, regardless of ethnicity, wealth, heritage, or education, is treated with respect and dignity. This city could exist. Today's headlines report the advancing culture of death that undermines the sacredness of human life at every developmental stage. With 59 million abortions and counting, and five states in the nation's capital legalizing assisted suicide, the culture of death is steadily marching to destroy generations of present and future Americans. Individuals are highly pressured to demand death simply because of depression, illness, or difficult circumstances. If a person does not benefit society, or if one is an inconvenience to another's career, that individual is worthless and expendable. A culture of life defies death. In such a culture, every human being is priceless. Furthermore, this culture honors the family. Marriage is a beautiful, God-ordained institution. Romantic love and sexuality are not the foremost reasons for marriage. Rather, marriage is a union in which man and woman become one. The husband becomes more himself by being complimented by his wife, and vice versa. Instead of accepting divorce and adultery, husbands and wives love, learn, serve, and ultimately do life with one another. Couples can welcome and raise children in this wholesome, loving environment. In a city of life, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them, as we are told in Psalm 127, 3-5. Children, most especially those with genetic diseases or mental and physical impairments, are priceless gifts. A culture of life views children as invaluable. They are the future leaders, creators, and legacy makers. A pro-life city respects both genders, acknowledging and accepting gender differences. Male and female are created to glorify God and enjoy Him forever, but through different roles. By understanding this truth, a pro-life culture avoids the terrible confusion of today's society, which desires to eliminate gender altogether. Instead, a city of life embraces a girl as a female and a boy as a male, never seeking to change that reality. One gender is no more special than the other. Together, the genders complement one another through their skills, abilities, and characteristics. This culture can exist. We, the rising generation, must end the march of death. First, we must pray that support for the culture of death would decrease. Second, we must be considerate of those contemplating abortion or euthanasia. Third, we must educate ourselves on the history, nature, and effects of the culture of death. Fourth, we must support legislation which upholds the sacredness of human life at any age. Fifth, we must proclaim the message of life worldwide. We must live out our belief in life's sacredness. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. Psalm 139:13-16. This is what a culture of life believes. This is what we must pursue.
Wow. Well, very, very good. That is the winner in the 11th and 12th grade category in the Right to Life essay contest, Faith Merle. And Faith, great job. Great job on the essay there and reading it. It was very, very good. Wow, those were all spectacular, just fabulous essays. You can see that a lot of thought and a lot of research went into them. You guys at Right to Life must be proud of that. I mean, I know it's work to do the contest every year, but it sure seems like it's worth it.
Oh, I love reading the essays, reading through them. And, you know, you say that the kids put a lot of work into them, and it's very true, but that's really the point behind it, is these essays are a chance to give young people an opportunity to kind of dig into some of the life issues and, you know, get a deeper understanding for themselves and then obviously share that knowledge with others. And, you know, I think by doing that, we really are creating sort of a culture and ethic of life in this upcoming generation.
Okay. We're talking to Mark Tuttle with Right to Life. And Mark, before you go, remind us of the upcoming things where you need some volunteers and your dinner coming up.
Right, right. So middle of July, we will have the Hendricks County Fair and Johnson County Fair, as well as a couple of booths at Black Expos. We need volunteers for all of those. We need volunteer help staffing the booths and you know, helping us kind of be ambassadors out to the general public. And then our dinner will be October 3rd. We'll have Pam Stenzel, abstinence speaker, and you know, she's got her own testimony, having been conceived in rape. So should be a great dinner.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mark Tuttle from Right to Life of Indianapolis. And thanks to all of the young people who joined us here as well. Carolyn Funder, Anne Marie Frisbee, Faith Murrell, and Thomas DeFries. So thank you all very much for being part of Faith in Action today.